The Associated Press reported last week, this Christmas, no prayers will be said in several mega churches around the country. Even though the holiday falls this year on a Sunday, when churches normally host thousands for worship, pastors are canceling services, anticipating low attendance on what they call a family day. Callie Parkinson, a spokeswoman for Willow Creek Community Church, which is one of these huge mega churches with thousands and thousands of attendance, in South Barrington, Illinois, said church leaders decided that organizing services on a Christmas Sunday would not be the most effective use of staff and volunteer resources. The last time Christmas fell on a Sunday was 1994, and only a small number of people showed up to pray, she said. Cindy Willison, a spokeswoman for the Evangelical Southland Christian Church, said at least 500 volunteers are needed, along with staff, to run Sunday services for the estimated 8,000 people who usually attend. She said many of the volunteers appreciate the chance to spend Christmas with their families instead of working, although she said a few church members complained. Well, our member numbers here certainly do not even come close to what some might call a mega church, but we are glad that you're all here. We had services today, and it's obvious that we've got visitors today, and we are delighted that you're here, because it's good to worship God on this day, whether it's Christmas or not. And indeed, it's good to worship Him on any Sunday, regardless of what's going on. Yes, if we can worship God every day, I'd say, let's do it. Let's adore Him and honor Him at all times. And if you're here because this is Christmas, we welcome you. But we invite you to come all the time. If you do not recognize Christmas at all, we welcome you. And we invite you to come all the time. Read the Scriptures and adore the Lord as your faith leads you to do, remembering that each of us must appear before Him and give account of our lives to Him. Whatever you do, remember that Jesus left a mansion to go to a manger, to go back to a mansion, and now from that mansion, He invites us to join Him in that mansion someday. And we get there by going through His death. Because that is how He got back up there. Yes, He was born into this world. He lived a relatively short time, not even seeing His 34th birthday. And they killed Him, and now He's back in a mansion. And He wants us to join Him. But that means we have to go through His death too. We have to be joined with Jesus Christ, coming in contact with His death by means of baptism. Does the most important person on earth think of you? Does he even know you exist? Does he care? Here is an irony. There is someone who is so great that it's not even worthy to compare this someone with the greatest person on earth. And yet, this someone thinks of you. He knows that you exist. He cares for you. And that's what we're going to find out this morning in Psalm 40. God thinks of you. He thinks of you on this day, and He thinks of you on every day. Listen to verses 1 through 3 of Psalm 40. In the preface, it begins by saying, to the chief musician, a psalm of David. I waited patiently for the Lord, and He inclined to me and heard my cry. He also brought me up out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock and established my steps. He has put a new song in my mouth, praise to our God. Many will see it in fear and will trust in the Lord. Did David know that the world would know his struggles? Well, he at least wanted Israel to know. Therefore, after writing this psalm, he gave it to the chief musician who either wrote the music to it or conducted it for Israel. Now, beginning at verse 1, literally in the Hebrew, David said, "Waiting, I wait." Stressing what he was doing with the Lord. God did not deliver David immediately, which is why he had to wait patiently. You see, just because we're in a hurry doesn't mean that God's in a hurry. And just because we're not in a hurry doesn't mean that God's not in a hurry. He may very much be in a hurry. But what David could see is that God was inclining to him, leaning toward him, hearing his cries of desperation. In verse 2, you'll notice that David stated that he felt trapped and vulnerable in the pit in which he found himself. He could not see things going anywhere. It was like being stuck in the miry clay. Yet God rescued him and put him on a rock rather than allowing him to be down in the pit, and made his feet established rather than having them stuck in the miry clay. There are times to cry out to God in desperate prayer. In 1968, a jet was preparing to land in New York. The landing gear would not lock into place, and so the passengers were prepared for a crash landing. And just before the belly landing, the pilot came on and said this: "We are beginning our final descent. At this moment, in accordance with the international aviation codes established at Geneva, it is my obligation to inform you that if you believe in God, you should commence prayer." After this episode, and they landed relatively safely, a relative of one of the passengers called the airline to find out about this code. And they were told, no comment. Truly, there was no comment, even as there are no atheists in foxholes. Or, you know, I've thought about these school shootings. Can you see, as a kid is going through a school and he's got a weapon and he's unloading it, and suddenly the principal comes on the PA system and says, "You know, we have a crisis on hand, but I want to remind you that it's illegal for you kids to pray in school." I don't think that would happen. In fact, I'd say, "Pray! I don't care if you're breaking the law." That's what I would say if I was principal anyways. But despite situations in life, desperate situations in life, bring out our true beliefs. We want God and we want Him now. What good does the life of secularism do you when you're about ready to make a crash landing? Do you remember in 1980 when Mount St. Helens blew? On television, I saw this on television, and then later I was able to download it on the internet. There was a man who was running from the destruction. He was caught in it, and he was videotaping it. But when he suddenly saw the rush of, you know, all that smoke and heat and the ashes and everything come racing toward him, he just started running, not concerned about filming anymore, but he left his camera on. And most of the time, the camera's going up and down like this, and you're not seeing a whole lot. But he was breathing deeply, he was sobbing, he was panting, and he was speaking to God, and here's what he said. I don't know if any of you saw this or not, but when I saw it, it just sent chills up and down my spine. He said, "Oh God, oh my God, help, help. Oh Lord God, get me through. God, I need you. Please help me. I don't know where I am." And then there's more sobbing, more rapid breathing. He's spitting, gagging, coughing, and panting still more. And some of his last words before he died were, "It's so hot, so dark. Help me, God. Please, 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 please. Oh, God." And when it came down to a desperate situation, he didn't know where else to go but to the same one and to the same place where David finds himself, right here in Psalm 40. Man, are you in trouble? Cry out to God. Have you been in trouble and you did cry out to God and he answered? Well, do what David did now in verse 3. Give praise to God as quickly as you sought his help. Others will see what has happened and they'll trust in the Lord. Listen to what David now says in verse 4. "Blessed is that man who makes the Lord his trust and does not respect the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies." So at the end of verse 3, he said, you know, he spoke about having trust in the Lord. And now he says, blessed is that man, blessed is that woman who does that very thing, trusting in the Lord. You're not respecting the proud. You're not giving heed to lies. And you know something? It's for those very three things in verse 4 that David's in heaven right now. Verse 5. "Many, O Lord my God, are your wonderful works which you have done, and your thoughts toward us cannot be recounted to you in order. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered." God's works and thoughts toward us are truly without number. I would encourage everyone here this week, if you really aren't sure about God's blessings, take a piece of paper. Time yourself for 15 minutes. Draw a line right down the middle of the piece of paper. On one side, put material things, and on the other side, put spiritual things. And at 15 minutes, just start writing down every material blessing you have and every spiritual blessing. Just see how many you can write down. My guess is that you're going to end up being like David right here in verse 5. You're going to think, wow, this is more than I realized. I've never done this before. I only took 15 minutes to do this. After 5 minutes, I could already tell that this is an impossible task. How can I analyze all that's God done? How can I make the list and put a number on it? I can't measure it. I can't number it. I can't see how they all work together. You know, what a blessing to know that God outdoes us, He overcomes our problems, and He overwhelms us with His sweet grace. Having said that, now in verses 6 through 8, David prophesies of the greatest work and thought that God has ever had toward us. He now proceeds further in verses 6 through 8. "Sacrifice and offering you did not desire. My ears you have opened. Burnt offering and sin offering you did not require. Then I said, behold, I come. In the scroll of the book it is written of me. I delight to do your will, O my God, and your law is written in my heart." After having pondered God's works and thoughts toward us, you know, what can we do in return? When you write down on that piece of paper, if you just think to yourself, how can I show Him my gratitude? Or what does He want from me? Well, sacrifice and offering, David says, he does not want. What God wants is what is behind the giving of the sacrifices and the offerings. Do you want gifts from people you love? Well, if those gifts are as a substitution for their hearts, then you probably don't want the gifts. But if the gifts are an extension of the love that's in their hearts, you'll say, man, I'll take your gifts any day. Our God the same way. He wants us. And He wants us as a sacrifice. And verses 7 and 8 show how we make that sacrifice. Three things. Number one, He wants us to open our ears to Him. Literally, in the Hebrew text, David said the idea of digging out the ear. Last night at my house, we had a wonderful conversation of getting our ears cleaned. And you know, you have to do that once in a while, don't you? In order to hear. So I'm not surprised that David spoke that way. Hear, spiritually, get that gook out of your spiritual ears and listen to God. That's all He wants. Well, that's not all He wants, but that's the beginning. He just wants us to hear what He has to say. Whatever is blocking our hearing from hearing His voice, remove the obstruction. Secondly, He wants us to delight to do His will. And thirdly, He wants us to put His law into our hearts. Now here's what I want you to notice. I want you to listen to Hebrews chapter 10. Because it explains how Jesus applied the passage I've just read to you from Psalm 40, verses 6 through 8. Hebrews 10, starting at verse 4. For it is not possible, the Hebrew writer says, that the blood of bulls and goats could take away sins. Therefore, when He came into the world, He said, when Jesus came into this world, and again, you know, as we think about this day and why so many people are worshiping Him today, He came not only to be born, but he came to be born to do what this now says in the rest of the text. Sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but a body you have prepared for Me. In burnt offerings and sacrifices for sin, you had no pleasure. Then I said, behold, I have come. In the volume of the book it is written of Me, to do Your will, O God. Previously saying, now the Hebrew writer explains that. Previously saying, sacrifice and offering, burnt offerings and offerings for sin you did not desire nor had pleasure in them, which are offered according to the law. Then He said, behold, I have come to do Your will, O God. He takes away the first that He may establish the second. In other words, when Jesus came into this earth, He came with the purpose of taking away the old law and giving us a new one. Verse 10. By that will we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. So in other words, Jesus willingly and delightfully offered Himself as a sacrifice. Am I moved to do the same? I think then when we come back to Psalm 40 and look at verses 6 through 8, we look at it with new eyes. Jesus did not send, but Jesus came. He sent the law, but it could not take away our sin. He sent the sacrifices, but they didn't take away sin. Therefore, He did it Himself. I don't mean that He offered sacrifices Himself because the priest couldn't do it. I mean He offered Himself. In heaven, He was a total spirit being. And then He comes into this world in much the same way that we do, but He acquired a body. But He then turned around and offered that body right back to God. He then rescued us from the horrible pit and the miry clay. Well, David, of course, speaking those things about himself. Now watch what David says in verses 9 and 10. But he's very open about God's ways. I have proclaimed the good news of righteousness in the great assembly. Indeed, I do not restrain my lips. O Lord, You Yourself know. I have not hidden Your righteousness within my heart. I have declared Your faithfulness and Your salvation. I have not concealed your loving kindness and your truth from the great assembly. How sad it would have been if David had kept quiet when God had done so much. He recognized that wouldn't be right. God, you've done some great things for me. I have to speak about these things. I think David is like some men who appeared later in the Old Testament record in 2 Kings chapter 7. The Bible shows us some men who recognize the danger of not speaking of God's goodness. See, what had happened was there's an army attacking Samaria. And God decided during the night to frighten away the attacking army. Of course, these lepers don't know that. And as God had frightened away this army, the army left everything. So the lepers are thinking to themselves, let's give ourselves up to the enemy, because if we stay here with Samaria, we're going to die of starvation. If they go over to the enemy, they're going to kill us anyway. There's a chance, though, that with them we might find mercy. So, thinking that the situation was like that, here's what happens. Listen to this in 2 Kings 7, verses 8 and 9. And when these lepers came to the outskirts of the camp, that is, of the enemy camp, they went into one tent and ate and drank, and carried from it silver and gold and clothing, and went and hid them. Then they came back and entered another tent, and carried some from there also, and went and hid it. Then they said to one another, "We are not doing right. This day is a day of good news, and we remain silent. If we wait until morning light, some punishment will come upon us. Now, therefore, come, let us go up and tell the king's household." In other words, there's all this food out here, and all this wealth, and we're enjoying it while our brethren are there inside the city of Samaria suffering. That's not right. We got to go tell them about this good thing that's happened. And so they did. In verses 11 to 13, David continues to show that he finally did receive help from evil and sin. This time he's talking about his own sin. He says to God, "Do not withhold your tender mercies from me, O Lord. Let your loving kindness and your truth continually preserve me. For innumerable evils have surrounded me. My iniquities have overtaken me so that I am not able to look up. They are more than the hairs of my head. Therefore, my heart fails me. Be pleased, O Lord, to deliver me. O Lord, make haste to help me." Innumerable evils, he says, including his own sins, surrounded him and overtook him. Do you know what David meant? Have you found yourself in that same situation, where you have sinned and you keep sinning and it tears you up? You know this is hurting God. You know it's not the right thing, but you keep doing it. It just seems like your sin is now running your life rather than God or even your own self. Hopefully, if you've been there, or maybe are now, you'll continue to see the picture that David shows us here. His sins made it so that he could not look up. He says they were more than the hairs of his head. His sin was so much, it even outnumbered the hairs on his head. His heart was failing, and so he felt shame in his spirit, and even his body was feeling it. It overwhelmed him, and he didn't know what to do except to cry to God. But now watch what his enemy does in verses 14 and 15. "Let them be ashamed and brought to mutual confusion who seek to destroy my life. Let them be driven backward and brought to dishonor who wish me evil. Let them be confounded because of their shame who say to me, 'Aha, aha,' like we finally caught you." Seeing David down because of his own sin, several people sought to take advantage of the situation and to hurt David. David had attacked himself with his own sin, and now his enemies are joining in on the attack. But he did not take personal vengeance. But he asked God, number one, to let his enemies be ashamed. Number two, for them to be brought to mutual confusion. Number three, to be driven backward and brought to dishonor. And number four, to be confounded. In other words, God, deal with my enemies. I know that I have sinned. Forgive me of that sin. But please, deal with my enemies. And you know something? God heard that prayer. That's why this psalm is in the Bible. So if you find yourself in the same circumstance, do what David did. Man, pour out your heart to God. Let Him hear what is troubling you. He cares for you. That's why He sent Jesus Christ. But especially look at verse 16. Let all those who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. Let such as love your salvation say continually, the Lord be magnified. Our troubles can choke us, leaving us wondering what we should do. And then things work out. For we're all here today. How did that happen? God worked in your life. Let's not forget Him now, but let us magnify Him. And so David finally ends the psalm in verse 17 by saying, but I am poor and needy. In other words, God, I magnify you, but I know that I am poor and needy. Yet, the Lord thinks upon me. The Lord, he says in Psalm 40, verse 17, thinks upon me. You are my help and my deliverer. Do not delay, O my God. The bear, lion, giant killer, the wealthiest man in Israel, had problems in which he was drowning. He was just like a poor and needy man. In other words, like one whom people ignore. But not God. God noticed him. God cared for him. Look at that second line where he says, yet the Lord thinks upon me. God does not ignore you. God thinks upon you. So much so that he was willing to be born into this world poor and needy. Starting, yes, in a feeding trough. In an obscure town called Nazareth. But he did it. To save you, to save me. From the most horrible pit. By His death, He provided cleansing for all our sins. Do you know what to do now? Think of God when you are centered on your problems. And He will think about you. And when you get to that point that you say, God, yes, you've helped me from all those other things, but the ultimate help that I need is I need to be saved from my sins. I don't want to die and be separated from you forever. I want to die and live with you forever. And if you're at that point, you know, why go on any further until you've become a Christian? Why not become a Christian this morning? Why not believe with all your heart that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? Why not turn from your old life? And why not die to self in baptism and come up out of the water living now as a new creature? If you're ready to do that, please come forward right now as we stand and sing.